Hey, good people. It is me, Rashawn Ali. Thank you so much for joining the Cool Sore podcast. Yes, and we are so happy to have a cool bruh on. Just rotating them in and out. Cool bruh, cool people, cool sore. It's all about sharing your stories. And speaking of which, we are making traction all across the world. Got to share with you guys some good news. We've got listeners in Bermuda, Belize, China, Egypt, Jamaica, Cayman Islands, New Zealand, Puerto Rico, Virgin Islands, U.S. Virgin Islands, and Vietnam. And if you are those people or that person, shout us out. Leave a 5-star review from wherever you are. And better yet, why don't you leave us a message or send us a message at cool@coolsoror.com and share your story and tell us how you've been inspired by some of the stories that you have heard here. That's cool@coolsoror.com. So we definitely appreciate your love and support. Today we are joined by a cool bruh of Omega Sci-Fi Fraternity Incorporated. His name is Aaron Paxton Arnold. He's from the south side of Chicago doing his thing. Very proud of this young brother doing his thing. And here he is with Faith and Commitment. Enjoy. You know you gotta be a cool soror to talk to the cool soror herself.
I'm a cool soror.
Hey y'all,
I am a cool soror of
what's up y'all, I'm a cool soror of
hi, I am a cool soror of
it's the Cool Soror Podcast, hosted by me, Rashawn Ali. Always good to have the cool bruhs on, and today I am joined by Aaron Paxton Arnold. You got a cool name, first of all. It's funny because I always just want to say Aaron Paxton, but that's your first and middle name.
Yeah, well, that's my mom's maiden name.
Nice.
And, you know, I'm trying to carry on the legacy.
Right.
And I just started using the name probably about four years ago when I was going through a whole rebranding process.
Right.
I went on Facebook and I saw it was a bunch of Aaron Arnolds, and most of them were like Caucasian.
Right.
And I was like, man, I need to do something. I need to change it. And when I was in high school, I used to give every girl that I dated like a stuffed animal, and they would always name it Paxton.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So I was like, man, let me just go ahead and use this name.
So you always been all about the ladies, huh?
Man, I've always loved it. My first kiss was in kindergarten.
Oh my God.
Rachel Schlesinger. She was white, she was Jewish.
Hey, Rachel,
wherever you are, Rachel Schlesinger.
Hilarious. Yes. So, Aaron, you are a cool brother of
Omega Sci-Fi Fraternity Incorporated. Shout out to fam UQs.
What up, Upside? That's how we do. Man, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I've been talking bad behind your back.
Yes,
and
you
I'm
have.
Glad I finally, but you know, like Kanye, sometimes you just know you want to be somewhere, you got to make sure you get there.
Yes.
I appreciate you.
Absolutely. I'm happy to have you on. Speaking of Kanye, you're from Chicago. What was life like growing up for you in the Chi-Town?
I always said the best thing about how I grew up and how I think all of us grew up is I grew up with the dope boys and the AP students, and I was somewhere in between. And so, when I look at my journey, especially in the music space, there's times I'm in the studio with people that got two strikes. You got guns and other stuff on the table. Then the next day you might be at Viacom with the executive vice president of Viacom.
Right.
And so the one thing I learned is you have to treat everybody with the same amount of energy and respect without dumbing yourself down or compromising who you are.
Right.
And so that's, growing up in Chicago did that for me. You know, I grew up on the South Side. And if you're black, you either grew up on the South Side or West Side. If somebody say East Side, they ain't from Chicago.
Right, I only hear South Side.
Well, because you'd be living in the lake if you grew up on the East Side. They lying.
Oh,
and
got
so
it.
We take that serious because there's just certain things. If you grew up on the South Side or West Side in Chicago, especially as a person of color, African American, that you go through that you probably did not experience if you lived in the suburbs.
Okay.
We take it, you know, all the people that came down to fam and said they were from Chicago, but they didn't have a 606, whatever it was, area code. Like, nah, you're not from Chicago. Just say where you're from and keep it moving.
So, you know, Chicago has been, you know, we see it all in the news and what's going on there. What do you feel like is happening in your city?
Well, it's funny.
I know that's heavy.
No, it's good. I mean, I've written like two pieces for CNN. I appeared on MSNBC in 2015 to discuss it. Gentrification is one.
Okay.
It's about money. The other part is about if I take our generation, and those are our kids out there.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a lot of broken parents. You have a lot of disenfranchised parents. And so, for example, while I respect My Brother's Keeper and programs like that, those programs were around when I was young.
Right.
And as you see, things have gotten progressively worse. And right. So you being a parent, me being a parent, the one thing I've learned is if you can save a parent, then you don't necessarily have to worry about the kid.
Uh-huh.
And so one of the things that I think that is missing is that we put all these programs into our kids, which is important, but when they go home, it's not reinforced.
Right.
And so, like, even when I speak now, whether it's at a high school or any place else, I always ask for the parents, because if I could save the parents, I don't have to worry about the kids.
Right, right.
And so I think on that level, like, the resources that we're putting into trying to solve the problem are kind of being misappropriated.
Okay.
The other part is Chicago is still one of the most segregated, if not the most segregated city in America.
Worse than Atlanta?
Yeah.
Yeah.
By far.
Uh-huh.
I mean, again, you say most of the people you know are from the South Side. So all the black people stayed on the South Side, West Side, North Side, generally, you know, white people,
mm-hmm.
You know, you got Chinatown, Greektown, et cetera, et cetera. what's the best way I can say it? So when they started, the reason, Cabrini Green, everybody knows about Cabrini Green.
Right.
Good times, it's just Cabrini Green. But Cabrini Green was not the worst housing project in Chicago. It was Ida B. Wells, Robert Taylor, which was on the South Side.
Mm-hmm.
But Cabrini Green got so much media attention because it was really so close to the Gold Coast, which is going into Evanston. That land is worth a lot of money. So what do? If we want to tear it down, we paint it as just this monster of a housing project, like the worst of the worst. So now the politicians can say, okay, we're going to tear this down.
Right.
We're going to build mixed income housing. But when those townhouses go up, $500,000, mm-hmm, $250,000, mm-hmm, they might have given vouchers for the people to live in them housing projects. But all that happened was they ended up moving out to the suburbs. And as my dad would always say, you can throw money at something and still won't fix the problem.
Right.
You didn't put any type of training programs in place. You just moved, either forced them out or cut them a check and moved them out. And so a lot of those same issues just got shifted to areas.
Right.
Meanwhile, you know, black folks and white folks move in that can afford it.
Mm-hmm.
And so when, as I say, the great gentrification of Chicago. So if you look at downtown and the Loop, there are a lot of charter schools that are popping up. You have resources that are being allocated from public schools to now the charter schools. And I always find that funny because I'm like, majority of the kids at charter schools have parents that can afford.
They can afford
that. They don't need that.
Right.
But on the accountability side, us as African-Americans, my dad would always say, Aaron, yeah, you might have been singled out in class, but you gave the teacher ammunition. So when they shut down the 50 schools, it's because attendance was at 50% in a lot of those schools.
Right.
So now we've given the ammunition to say, all right, we're about to close these 50 schools down and shift this funding to the other side,
mm-hmm,
where my constituency is and where they cut checks. And so for me, it goes back to accountability.
So, like, it's deeper than just what we see on the news. That is the result of a lot of this.
Yeah, it's a perfect storm. I mean, again, I look at it like, I don't never blame a kid. Like, everybody like the kids. But where are the parents at? Kids
right.
gonna do what kids do. Kids will do what you allow them and you teach them to do. If I didn't have my mom and dad, particularly my dad when I got older, because it was to a point that my mom wouldn't have been able to control me. If I didn't have my dad, I would have been one of them kids. Kids are going to do what kids. I will never blame a kid for picking up a gun and doing whatever, because why? How did you get the gun anyway?
Right.
Why did you? Well, you don't even understand the value of life because no one taught you that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I look at it like our grandparents, our parents, us, we are all responsible for what is going on now, and no one wants to take responsibility.
Man. And then a lot of the things, I mean, I've read or just having a general conversation with some folks yesterday, I think, about how, you know, they systematically locked up a lot of the leaders of the gangs. And so they have these folks that, you know, I guess foot soldiers that just are doing things that just sporadically, and there's no order.
Yeah.
It used to be order. Even though it was bad, there was order.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because when I was growing up, we actually had more murders in Chicago. We had 930 or something like that.
Oh, okay. Wow.
But that was in 1993. But majority, not all of them, but majority of those murders were just street murders. You know, street-related, gang-related, what have you. A lot of those OGs are either dead, locked up, or just tired. The grandmas are dead, locked up, or tired. So now what you have is all these kids just running the streets. So like in Chicago, you used to have like the Blackstones, which is primarily in the South Side and the West Side. You had the GDs, and then you had a couple other factions mixed in. But now it's just like, it's just crazy. Yeah. And you throw social media into the mix, a lot of our kids are being raised by social media. I mean, it's not, we could go say a million positive things, but kids are going to respond to what they see Rashawn or Aaron do.
Mm-hmm.
So if I see Rashawn or Aaron doing positive things, that's what I'm going to do. If I see the only person in my block that has money or successful slanging dope or murdering people, then that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just
product of your environment.
Product of your environment.
Influenced by.
I spoke at a school here, an at-risk school here several years ago, and all the kids, that they were black and brown, and all the kids wanted to do was either be rappers or athletes, yeah, because those were the only successful images of us that they had seen.
Right.
And so here I am about to come to talk to them about the music business, and I refused to because I didn't want to perpetuate the stereotype. Right. So, I mean, it's but the other thing, and this goes for Atlanta everywhere, we have enough young professionals in our cities where they just took an hour a month,
yeah,
maybe two a month, to just go into these communities and just build with these parents, build with these kids. I think that would make the world a difference because, yeah, again, a lot of these kids and parents just don't think they can do better than what mm-hmm. they're mm-hmm. doing right now.
Wow.
You know,
wow. Yeah. You know, Aaron, you're a lot of things. I mean, if you read your bio, you've done so much. Entrepreneur, lifestyle expert, keynote speaker, national media contributor, host and founder of Music Is My Business. I mean, you have done a lot. But what do you consider yourself? All of these things, but what would you say Aaron Paxton is? Or who he is?
I just like to be happy and have fun. Like,
yeah.
The reason I've touched those things is because I've, you know, they say, Darwin says necessity is the mother of invention. Well, I've always had a necessity or need to want to be happy.
Mm.
As much as I love my university, the one thing the college and the narrative that college gives you is that you graduate, you get a degree,
and you
make as
job.
Much money as
right.
you can, and
right.
that equals happiness. And that's far from the truth.
Right.
And once I realized that, and I remember when I saw the people in Enron and how they got screwed over, and I remember this black woman had lost like $400,000 in her 401k or something crazy. And I just said that would never be me.
Right.
And at that point, I was just like, no, I'm going to be happy regardless. Like, my first Black Enterprise feature, they asked me, where do you see yourself in 5 years? And I wouldn't answer because I'm like, shoot, I didn't see myself here mm-hmm. 5 years mm-hmm. ago. So why would I basically sell myself short? So whenever somebody asked me that question, I just said, I want to be happy.
Wow.
Like, to be happy, it's a sacrifice to be happy. You have to work to be happy.
Right.
That doesn't mean it doesn't come organically, but for true happiness, that means that you have to, in some cases, buck the system. You have to go against the grain because a lot of people are living the lives that others want them to live.
Right.
And, you know, for me, I understand, it's like, you know, you can only sleep in, my dad would always say, you can only sleep in one house, drive one car at a time, lay in one bed. So, you can't take none of the shit with. Oh, excuse me.
You can curse on here. It's fine.
Hey, y'all. I'm drinking Hennessy too, by the way.
So now it's a Friday. Yeah, I wanted to make him feel good.
Thank
it's
you.
Fine.
So now that we talking,
right?
But you can't take none of this with you. And so for me, my narrative hopefully is like when I get a tweet of some college student that says you changed or saved my life when you spoke to me over Christmas break. Like that is just as important as a check. Sometimes it's more important.
When did you realize that? You just want to be happy, and that does not equate to being a multimillionaire. While that would be great, but we see a lot of multimillionaires yeah. who aren't happy at all.
Or who commit suicide.
Yeah. Or when they lose it all, they jump off buildings in New York as a couple and leave yeah. a note that is covered in plastic bags saying, take care of my kids because yeah. you lost money?
Yeah,
come
yeah.
on, man.
Yeah, they true.
Yeah, yeah. Even though I'm not in their heads, but still.
Nah, I feel you. Now, my senior year of high school, I got arrested, and I remember sitting in jail. And it was sunny outside. And it was funny because my mom was downtown at City Hall because I was being awarded third place for a state poetry contest.
And you were in jail.
And I was locked up. And I remember sitting in jail in solitary confinement. They did me a favor because they was like, oh, we keep him in gym pop after 7, he probably not going to make it.
Right.
But I remember sitting in this small cell. I opened my eyes. I closed my eyes. It all looked the same. It was that dark. And that was the only time, and really the first time I had a regret. And I just like everything that my dad had told me came true. He was like, the people you hanging with aren't your real. It was like you start to replay everything in your head. Like, dad was right. This, and that. And I just said to myself, I'll never feel like this again. Like if I could have taken that moment back, I would have.
What did you do?
I'm not going to say what I did.
Okay.
I'll tell you later.
All right.
I mean, it's not a big deal. I'm just not going to say what I did.
Okay. I got you.
But it was a blessing.
And a curse.
No, it was just a blessing.
Okay.
my mom happened to be in law school at the time, so I remember I had to take all my graduation money and pay the her professor who represented my attorney. And basically, my parents, the first time I ever put a portfolio together, a real resume together, and basically they presented that to the court, and the charges were dropped. And so I got lucky. And I had just got accepted in the fam. I had just gotten the NABJ scholarship, all of that. And my dad was like, it's a shame if you have to lose all of this because it doesn't go your way. And that probably saved my life, because if I had gone down to Tallahassee doing the same thing, you know, in Tallahassee, they don't want you there anyway.
Right.
So it would have been, the result would have been a lot different. That situation, I always had no regrets. Like, I don't ever want to feel this way again. Like, if I fail or make a mistake, I need to make sure it's on my account. I think the worst thing to have is success, but it's success based off of someone else or someone that you're not, because now you got to continue to be that person forever.
Right.
And that's why people kill themselves. That's why people are rich but aren't fulfilled, because mm-hmm. on some level you've achieved a certain level of success, but it wasn't you.
Hmm.
And so I'd rather take the long route, grind it out, still be me and get that success, then maybe, you know, skip a couple steps because people say this is how I want you to be. But now it's like, when you're not that person, they don't want to mess with you anymore.
Right.
And, you know, that could be bad.
Yeah. Yeah. You did a few years in corporate America. What were those years like for you? Because that's when you were still living that dream that you felt like people placed. Well, you allow people to place on you. Or at that time, you probably didn't know any better.
Yeah, I mean, it was crazy because, like, in public relations, you know, so I was a print journalism and PR major in school. Actually, shout out to Rashawn Ali and her homegirls, because I saw them one day. I think y'all was selling cookies. It was PRSSA or something like that.
Oh, my.
You and, was it not Vanette? What was her name? Aisha.
And God, that was like, honey, I don't even remember none of this.
And I was in love with all of y'all. And so I walked into this Public Relations Student Society of America meeting. And
I wasn't in that group, or was I?
I think you were, but okay. I just remember you was part of that crew, and I followed the ladies, but I remember being in there, and it was just me and Latron Thorne, and I remember they introduced me to this Ketchum boot camp,
mm-hmm.
and I was like, wow, what is that? And they were like, you want to come? Because we need some more males. I was like, sure. And I went to the Ketchum boot camp, and I kind of fell in love with PR, because it incorporated not only just PR, but print, broadcast, radio, like you did it all at an agency. And so when I came out of college, I went to Ketchum Public Relations.
Oh, okay.
Where I did corporate, and then went to Edelman where I did consumer. Then I went to Hill & Knowlton in New York where I did B2B and consumer entertainment. And then I went to a fourth agency that I won't name. But I went to that my last agency because they paid me a lot of money. I had finally caught up with my line brothers that were making 80, 90 a year. And I hated it.
Mm.
And I couldn't.
Why won't you name that place? Was it a bad experience?
It was a very bad experience. I will say that I experienced corporate racism there.
Okay.
And did what I had to do to protect myself. And so the case is sealed.
Right. Did you win?
Oh, yeah.
You won. Good.
And
you
so how God works is I was about to quit anyway because I was about to take an unpaid internship at Bad Boy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just got to leave with a little bit of change in my pocket.
Yeah,
and
that's what helped. Was a blessing for sure.
It was. And that's why I always say, like, if you fight for what you believe in, if you stay committed to who you are, God might let you go through something, but at the end of the day, God's not going to let you fall.
Yeah.
And if he lets you fall, God is going to be there. He will be there to pick you up.
Absolutely.
And so, like, I'm a walking testimony of that. Every time I was like, man, this ain't going to work, but I still stuck with it. A check came from somewhere, a door opened here. And it might have just been an opportunity just to get you to that day or to that month.
Absolutely.
But sometimes that's all you need.
That's it. I just need to see tomorrow.
Right.
You give me to tomorrow, then it means I have enough to get to the next day.
Right. But so at the end of the day, it comes down to faith and commitment. And so many people lose or faith. The people are like, I got faith. But I tell people faith is when you got to pay your mortgage or your rent. And there's a check in front of you, but you know that check isn't good for you.
Mm.
Faith is when you walk away from a check that you think you know you need.
Yeah, and I've done that. You know, once I started to begin to know who I am, mm-hmm. I started to say no, even when there was a check involved.
Right.
Like, well, we want you back on the radio.
Yeah.
No. As good as that would be right now, and as bad as I need that money, no, thank you. And that didn't happen just one time. It happened.
It happens a lot.
A lot.
It happens a lot.
But I knew that that wasn't my path anymore.
The devil is real too.
Oh yeah.
You know, and I mean, but most people, I don't want to say they're blinded, but most people are, maybe they're blinded or they just, I don't know what it is, but every time I've chased a check, and it's funny because, you know, Future got the song out, whatever, but every time I've chased a check, I find myself further back than what I would have been if I had just stayed the course
that I knew
I was supposed to stay.
Right.
That my heart and my spirit and my soul was telling me not to take that check.
Oh, my God.
But you're not, I'm not going to listen to God. Nah,
well, that can't be him saying that. Or, you know, you start trying to mute the voice.
Right, right. Yeah. I'm going to get this car. I'm going to get these shoes. I'm going to get this place. And then you take that check and you end up selling, giving a piece of you that you can't get back. In addition to that, you still lose everything.
Yeah.
And, but it's cool though. You need those lessons in order to grow.
Right. So you took this unpaid internship with Bad Boy.
Yeah.
And you know, Mr. Diddy Combs, who today, as of today, is the wealthiest rap artist with $130 million this year alone. What did you learn from him and that experience?
You know what? Working for Mr. Combs was like pledging, honestly. And being that I had pledged, like, it didn't bother me.
Right.
Like, my pitch to him once I got to his office was that I will give you a year for free if you agree to mentor and groom me. And he never said yes, but he never said no.
Mm-hmm.
And I stayed another 12 months, and it changed my life. And regardless of what people think of him, my first check from my company came from him.
Wow.
When I spoke at Harvard in 2012, and he found out about it, he publicly endorsed me on Twitter, which changed a lot for me. You know, I probably still get checks just off the affiliation alone.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, he's recently in Forbes as one of the 100 most influential voices or whatever. And, you know, with Bill Gates and all those people. So, man, shout out to Puff, because as he continues to grow, that helps me.
Right.
In addition to that, I know I was blessed enough where I'm part of his legacy. So as I continue to grow, you know, he can't take the money with him, but he can leave a legacy with his kids and the other people that have that he's impacted.
Yeah, I mean, obviously for generations to come.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, he has established his life for his amazingly beautiful children, and now they're, you know, to see Christian like modeling and doing things, and he set that up for them.
And I used to carry Christian's, pack Christian's clothes and bags, Justin's bags.
Really?
So, yeah, I mean, look, I was the oldest intern at 24, 25 when I started. And even I might have looked younger than them. Like, it was crazy. I was married. And so it was crazy. But, you know, I just came there focused. Like, you know, I wasn't trying to be his best friend. But, you know, we had good conversations. We had good moments. And, you know, again, if you just stay true to yourself, like, people notice it.
Right.
People see it. And that changed my life. I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you if it wasn't for that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I truly believe that.
So you stepped away from there, and then you established Music Is My Business. So what exactly was and or is that?
Yeah. So when I was in my agency world, like, I was basically trained as an integrated marketer. Like, everything, the internet was really starting to change the way we marketed and did everything. So everything was about integration. You couldn't just get a placement here or a placement there. It's like, okay, if we had this placement, then what event are we doing around this and so forth. So when I launched my company, it was based off kind of that training. So there's a brand management component, television and film component, and then the music publishing component. And like, my first client was the United Nations World Food Program, which we did pro bono. And I remember being in the studio one day and with some other dudes, and they was like, man, you ain't getting no money off that. And I remember the engineer, he's a white guy, he pulled me aside and he was like, man, fuck them. He was like, you have a client that is a global client that's based out of Rome in New York. Run with it. And that's what landed us on CNN.
Wow.
And then from CNN came Inc. Magazine. Then from Inc. Magazine came Black Enterprise, and the rest is history. Now I find myself speaking at Georgia Tech to a bunch of engineers, or, you know, Harvard or USC or Capitol Hill, et cetera, et cetera. All because we took that client. And then, you know, we would have other clients like Heineken and, you know, Brian Michael Cox was a client. Danny Kang was our very first check ever. When they were still doing their thing.
Right.
And then we did a lot of visual content for those same clients, and then the music publishing. So I had producers and songwriters that I managed, and we had, you know, good placements there. And everything was going well. I mean, let me be honest. Like, I got my first check, and then I didn't get another check for 8 months because I didn't know what I was doing.
Oh, okay.
So I had to humble myself. I had to figure out, okay, what is the one thing that you know how to do really well that can get you that first check? And if nothing else, I know how to brand. I know how to market.
Mm-hmm.
And so, all right, we're going to go get that client, which is Heineken, and they cut us a nice check, and then the rest is history.
Yeah. Do you still currently do – I mean, is everything still funneled through there?
So – again, this is how God works. This is how life works. At the peak where everything was going really well, like, money was coming in, like, it was great, I went to speak at that school. And I looked at those kids, and the fact that all they wanted to be was athletes or rappers, it didn't sit right. And I'm not knocking, because I have a lot of we both have a lot of good friends and good people that are in music that are doing really well, that are like really good people. But I didn't feel comfortable talking to these kids about the music business because that was the only thing that they had been exposed to. Mm-hmm. So I was like, man, I started talking to them about entrepreneurship and purpose and ownership. And we had a great, great time. And I began to realize at the end of the day, you just have to give these kids options. And they'll gravitate towards what they gravitate towards to. And at that point, I knew I needed to make a change. I didn't feel good about being in this in that space. And I ended up walking away from it to really kind of just focus. And I had a mentor, a True Pettigrew, who told me, we had a conversation one night. He was like, Aaron, you won't be in this business long. He's like, God has an anointment for you that you don't even know yet. And he's like, just promise me when it hits you, when you figure it out, don't fight it.
Have you figured it out?
I'm doing it now.
Nice.
And so it's crazy because I'm like, what are you talking about? Like are you smoking? Like, what are you talking about? And the catalyst was kind of like when I went to that school and I just didn't feel good about it. And I really didn't understand, like, what is my purpose? Like, I wasn't necessarily walking in my purpose yet. And kind of to what you alluded to and what we talked about before we got on air is that just because you're good at something doesn't mean you should be doing it.
Man,
right. So I had to realize, like, I was good at this, but I was like, I shouldn't be doing that. So what is my purpose? Well, I've been speaking all over the country. Maybe I should focus on that, you know. Per my wife, she sent me an article on Ryan Seacrest and was like, you know, I read his story. There's a lot of things I didn't know about him. And I was like, wow, that's amazing. And basically what she was saying is like, you putting all this time and energy into others, what would happen if you put that time and energy into yourself? And I was like, oh, okay. And so I pretty much, you know, I started over. That's when I started using my middle name.
Mm-hmm.
And I rebranded myself. Denise Hendrix at CNN gave me the title Entrepreneur Lifestyle Expert. And I just ran with it. And it's funny because I was a print journalism major and PR major in college. And I was like, I'll never write again. Now I find myself contributing to CNN and doing the stuff that I was trained to do in college. And I began to realize that I had a voice for those that are voiceless.
Right.
So that's why it was so cool, because I had, you know, myself and a slew of others, I had watched you for years do what you do. And then I had an opportunity in 2014 to join KISS 104.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, my wife was listening to Jeff Johnson on the Ricky Smiley show, and she called me and was like, why aren't you on the radio? And I was like, why would I be on radio?
Right.
And she was like, well, what Jeff Johnson does on radio, you do all the time when you speak. So I'm like, all right. So I reached out to Roy. Roy was like, this is perfect timing because we're making changes at the station. A month later, I was on radio.
Wow.
And I wasn't getting paid for it, of course, because I had no radio experience. So, but I did it for a year. And then, you know,
things changed.
But yeah. Radio really is what changed everything, because my first segment was as this lifestyle entrepreneur, lifestyle expert. And then the program director was like, you know what? We have a health and wellness expert, apples and oranges. And they were like, Aaron, how do you feel about covering everything, lifestyle, news, and entertainment? And I was like, shit, that's great, because now I get to showcase more of my personality and never look back. And that kind of became my blueprint. So whether I'm like writing for The Undefeated or, you know, I just did a piece in Essence this year, which is basically a letter to my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
I get to integrate. The key word is integration. This is how I work. I get to integrate all facets of who I am into my work. And so, you know, you ask the question, like, who is Aaron Paxton Arnold? I still don't know yet. I'm still growing, but
you know that you're walking in your purpose.
I'm walking in my purpose. I'm happy. I know every day when I wake up in the morning, I'm doing something that's either inspiring, educating, and or entertaining people. And that's amazing to me.
Like, yeah.
I never say I'm a motivational speaker because I do keynotes.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know, anybody can motivate, but it takes a lot to be able to do a keynote. So I take pride in my skills, and I've worked hard at it, and I'm still working hard. I still got room to grow. And, you know, I'm just trying to be at your level one day.
Oh, man, let me tell you something. Whatever. It's different levels, because I'm thinking over here, wow, he can coach me in my, you know, my keynote speaking skills. You know, I have great natural skills, but to be able to be like, and then this, and there's the point in this, you know?
You just got to be yourself, which is why you're successful.
That's all I know how to be.
It ain't nothing else to it.
Yeah, that's all I know how to be. And the thing is, once you, like, my mom used to always say, once you know that you know that you know that you know, you really do know. And I used to be like, that is the dumbest thing ever.
But it take all them no's for you to understand, and know people meaning K-N-W-O.
Yes.
It take all them no's to know, like, okay. Like, I remember when, so I got to go do a keynote in Memphis for the 40 Under 40 Awards in Memphis. And I remember when I got the 30 Under 30 for Inc. Magazine, I thought I had made it.
Right.
And little did I know that I wasn't even going to be doing that 2 years later. The recognition that I got for that, I'm not even doing now. So it's like, you think you know, but God, like, I know.
Right.
So.
And then I think that people, they feel like they just have one purpose in life. I feel like there's several purposes in our lives, and that once we complete it, it's time to move on to like the next purpose.
I mean, everything is integrated, right?
Yes.
Everything is connected. Everything is interconnected. I feel like I hate the narrative when I hear people say, oh, I'm 25, I'm supposed to have this. I'm 35, I'm 45. Or even, I was telling the students when I spoke at the University of Houston last week, and I told the students, I'm like, look, I had a great time in high school, but I had a greater time in college. And then people are always like, well, college is it. Like, once you get to the real world, you ain't going to have that fun. I'm like, why not?
Right.
I'm thankful for my college experience, but I've had greater experiences since I've graduated from college.
Mm-hmm.
I've had greater experiences in my 30s than I did in my 20s.
Man, wait till you get to your 40s. I'm trying to tell you.
And now I'm on my way to the 40s.
right.
You just got to keep living life and pushing the limit and exploring and wanting to get better.
Right.
You know, and I think that's what people fail to realize. They get so jaded, or they like, I was at Crickets. I ain't gonna lie, I was at Crickets, J.R. Crickets last week, turning up.
Yeah.
Like, I'm talking about, we was getting it. Fridays the next day, turning up. Cause like, you just got to live life.
You
like,
have to. I was just talking to my makeup artist in the chair today and you know.
Hey, she said makeup artist.
No.
Ooh, oh, hush. Wee, she fancy.
The collective knows I got a new TV show on TV One.
Thank
they
you.
Know.
And she got a makeup artist.
And my makeup is still popping. What's up, Kelvin Myers?
You don't do your makeup.
No,
somebody
I don't.
Do it for you.
Let me tell you something. I wrote that down in my journal. I'm like, I want to go to show my talent. I want hair, makeup, and wardrobe. Every day, and it came true.
Absolutely,
it truly came true.
Yes,
but just really,
that's real.
He and I were talking, and I was like, you know, so many people are tied to, I got to do right here on earth so I can get to heaven. Mm-hmm. When you really have heaven here on earth,
yes,
if you know how to live your life,
absolutely,
you know how to.
I ain't ready to go to heaven yet.
Right? No, your heaven's here because you have you know what it is that you want, and your main thing in life is to be happy. So you have found that. You found the answer. Yep. So many of us we got to do the right thing so I can make it. No,
just live life.
Just live it.
Yeah.
Just live it. And I mean, it took me a while to get to that place.
In order to just live it, though, that means you have to be vulnerable. That means that you have to sacrifice everything that is good to potentially maybe have a chance to everything that is great. And most people aren't willing to do that.
No.
Like one of my favorite books is From Good to Great by Jim Collins. Like, I have it tattooed on my neck. Like, I believe as African Americans, we can't just settle for being good. Like, we just can't, because there's too many obstacles against us already. And that doesn't mean that we'll all be great, but it's all about the effort that you make.
Right.
I feel like average people do great things every day, but that's because of their willingness to put themselves out there.
Yeah.
And like, again, it goes back to my happiness. Like, I'm man, like I have friends now that have sitcoms on television. So I'm like, cool. Like, I need to keep grinding. I need to keep doing what I'm doing. But I can't imagine not have taken in that. I just can't imagine not have taken that chance and taking an unpaid intern. And it really, if you look at it, it wasn't unpaid, because the access that I got, I couldn't have paid for.
Right.
So I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you now. So people you just have to look at things for the greater purpose, the greater good. And so one of my favorite movies for this reason alone is The Bee Movie with Jerry Seinfeld.
Mm-hmm.
And it's simply because at the very beginning, the bees graduate from high school and they go to this board and they pick out a career. And I'm like, man, what if life was that simple, where there was like no racism, no sexism, no classism? We live in a utopian society. You figure out what you love to do and you just do it. That's what you assign to the rest of your life.
Right.
But it can be like that. You just got to, it just requires sacrifice, perseverance, and a lot of hard work and then smart work.
Yeah.
But most people ain't willing to do that.
No.
So they end up not fulfill ultimately,
or they have a totally skewed vision of what success is.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I think the majority of the world has a totally skewed vision
of
what success is.
I challenge people, like, even the ones that are doing well, like, if you lost your job today, what would you do?
Yeah.
You gonna go look for the same job, or is there something out there that you know God was calling you to do?
Right. But you know, everybody has, it's always something inside of everybody. And I always say, when I go speak to people, and I've said it here on this podcast, if God placed it on your heart, how dare you not try?
Yeah.
So many people go to their graves not even having tried what had been placed in their hearts for 15, 20, 30, 40 years.
Yeah.
You know?
I just look at it as kind of a slap in the face, just because there are people that didn't wake up this morning, didn't wake up the other day, and would love to have another day, another month, another year to execute whatever it is that they want to do. And for some reason, God has seen fit to keep us here.
Yes.
And so I'm like, wow.
That means you have another day. Every day you wake up, you have another day.
Absolutely.
To get it right, yep. To fulfill that purpose, to
get
change
it right,
your life.
Get it tight.
No. Yeah, he said, look at him. Look at him.
It's Friday. It's Friday.
It's Friday. It's all good. Yeah. It's all good. So at the end of it all, what do you want people to say about Aaron Paxton? What's your dream for yourself? I know you're walking in your purpose.
Yeah.
You want to be happy, but I know that there's that thing that says, oh, that's exactly it. What is that?
It's fine. I just want people to say that I changed lives.
Yeah.
Like, seriously. I've always been the type of person where it's not cool for me just to change one person's life. Like, I like traveling all over the country. Like, I want to travel all over the world. Like, I want whatever content that I produce or I create to have a global impact. Like, that's just been the goal. It's funny because I hated speaking until I got to FAM, and I had to do this Secretary of Communications thing for SGA. Mm-hmm. And that was the first time I actually got up in front of an audience, and it changed for me. After that, right. I was like, ooh.
You like that?
I liked the adrenaline. I liked the energy. I was like, okay, I'm not bad at this. And, I mean, you know, whether it's hosting a party, whether it's speaking, whether it's being on radio, I mean, you know, I'm not in this position, but whether it's having your own show on TV1, like, it's not about the glamour and the Hollywood stuff. It's about the fact that you might get a tweet from somebody that you don't know. You might get an email from somebody that you don't know, or that you do know, and they're watching you because you are a reflection and image of them, saying, wow, I could do this on any level. Like, I can be a mom, I could be a wife, I could be whatever I want to be professionally and do it all. Because there's so many things that are telling our young people of color that you can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or there's an industry saying, like, in order for you to be successful as a black male in this space, you got to sacrifice your wife and your kids.
Wow. Yeah.
You don't have to do that.
No.
You know, you just have to stay true to who you are.
You can have it all.
Yeah, you can have it all.
You really can.
You just got to work at it. And then not just work to get it, but then work even harder to maintain.
To keep it.
Absolutely.
That's the point. Because I think a lot of people's like, oh, if I could just get right here. But then when you get it, do you have everything that you need to keep it and to catapult it if that's the next level?
So I just want people to, like, I love to have fun. Like I said, I love to inspire, educate, and entertain. And I just wanted to be like, Aaron was handsome. He was nice. He was sweet. He treated us well. And that's it.
I mean,
outside of that, I don't know, because I never imagined doing any of the things I'm doing now, to be quite frank with you. Like, that was not in the plans coming out of college. Like, if I was in my college, coming out of college plan, I'd still be working for a PR agency.
Uh-huh.
I'd be like, I don't know how many titles, executive VP. But, you know, I remember, and you said something earlier, I remember they had my whole career laid out for me, like my track, you know, your career track. And I'm like, is this it? Like, there's got to be something more to it. And I just realized in that space that they couldn't harbor my ambition.
Right.
And so that's why I walked away.
Wow.
Because I just wanted to take a chance of being great.
So. Love it. Mm-hmm. Well, in the spring of 98, you became a member of the Upsilon Psi Chapter of Omega Psi Phi Fraternity, Incorporated, on the campus of Florida A&M University.
Yes.
Did Omega choose you, or did you choose Omega Psi Phi?
Nah, I definitely chose. So, you know, my dad is a Q, Upsi, Spring 67, M7.
He marched in the 100.
Yeah, he marched in the 100.
Yeah.
50-year anniversary was last year. But look, the first brother I ever saw on Florida A&M's campus was a bro by the name of Pedro Spiva.
Oh, Lord.
And Pedro was your typical Q dog.
He was my first Q that I met in the fall of 93.
Well, when I had met Pedro, Pedro had his ass cheeks out. I mean, he was just out.
He was the out, bro.
And I remember calling my dad like, Dad, I don't think I, you know, want to be a Q, whatever. And my dad was like, hey, well, you know, do what you do. Don't judge a book by its cover. So I went down to the Fry House anyway, and I don't know what I was thinking. I had a red Eddie Bauer jacket on.
Oh, God.
I had red and white Air Maxes on. I had earrings in my ears.
Oh, so my God.
The bros removed those items from my person. And then I remember sitting down with Greg Bradley.
Oh, man. He's good.
The bros were in the back. Robert Perry, all the bros were in the back wrecking, you know, doing what bros do. And so Greg Bradley was like, man, you sure you want to be a part of this? And I was like, I don't know. Then he started telling me about, like, what the bros actually did. And I think at the time, the bros had the highest GPA on the yard and stuff. And I was like, these? I can tell you what I said. But
right.
I was like, these dudes? And I just became fascinated because I was like, how can all this craziness go on, but they still had the highest GPA?
Right.
And I was like, I was just fascinated by that. I had never met Because growing up,
that's what I love about Omegas, because they be the most out.
Yeah,
but then they like.
Yeah, and Pedro is killing it. You know, I ain't gonna put his salary out there, but right. he's been doing and continues to do extremely well, and is one of the most humble people, but fun people that I know.
Right.
And so for me at least, you know, like I don't knock any other organization. I got uncles that are Kappas, Alphas, and so forth. But the Bruhs for me represented everybody that I had grown up with. You yeah. had Bruhs that just came to Bruhs, came to school to be Bruhs.
Right.
You had Bruhs that were like the academic Bruhs. You had pretty Bruhs. You had sloppy Bruhs. You right. just had all aspects of what I was used to seeing when I grew up in Chicago.
Yeah, from the dope boy to the AP student.
Right, from the dope boy to the AP student.
I love that.
And that just fascinated me. And then they told me I wouldn't come back. And then I was like, I came back every day for a year and a half, even on the holidays.
Wow.
And because, you know, I understood that my dad was upside, so I didn't want to make it just off the strength of.
Right.
And I wouldn't have made it off the strength of that anyway, but I didn't want people to say, oh, he's just doing this because of his dad.
Right.
Even though my dad was a heavy influence. And April 22nd, 1998, it was one of the best days of my life. My dad surprised me.
Wow.
I didn't know he was coming. I remember after we were done in the morning, and I called my mom at like 5 a.m. and I was like, Mom, I'm done. My mom's a Delta. Uh-huh. She flies to Central State.
Okay.
And I'm like, Mom, I was so disoriented. I didn't really comprehend. I was like, where's Dad? She was like, he's out changing a tire in the car, which would have meant it would have been 4 a.m. Chicago time. But I was so disoriented. I didn't recognize it. And then like about 8 a.m., my dad just walked through the door. And it
Man,
was,
did you fall out?
I cried.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was amazing. And my dad stayed for a week. I remember I had to fly to Detroit for the next day for an interview.
Oh, wow.
And but my dad stayed that whole week, took me to the airport, picked me up. And it was, my dad and I were close at that point, but we've shared a bond. And it's just been amazing.
You talk about your dad a lot. Like, I want you to just, if you can sum up that, what that man means to you.
Yeah, well, I would say this. Like, my mom is awesome.
Yes.
Like, my mom is great. My parents have been married for 46 years. But I think part of the reason why I talk about my dad so much is because for the first 16 years of my life, like, I was afraid of my dad. I always loved him. He loved me, but we wasn't friends.
Right. Well, you're not supposed to be friends. Well, now you get it now, right? I'm sure.
My dad was trying to make sure he saved my life.
Yeah.
And so I did an interview 2 years ago, and they said the same thing. Like, you talk about your dad a lot. And then the interviewer said, remove him from the equation. Where are you? And I was like, good, I've never been asked that before. And I had to think about it. And I was like, I would be dead. I wouldn't even be locked up. I would be dead. And I remember calling my mom and I was like, Mom, you know, obviously you've been in my life. You know, Dad and I would not be anything if it wasn't for you. But do you think, was I accurate? She was like, absolutely. Because
wow.
She was like, it got to a point where I wouldn't have been able to control you. And I was like, okay.
Because so, you didn't want to, after she saw that interview, you didn't want to offend her, right?
I always just want to make sure that I give my mom props. But, you know, I always like, moms, y'all adult, y'all get props.
Anyway,
that's
right.
Why Mother's Day, that's right. Why Mother's Day is always bigger than Father's Day. But and one of the things I've tried to do over the years, and I even wrote a piece for CNN, is really dispelling the myths of black fathers. Because there's this narrative in our communities and outside of our community that black men are not good fathers and we're not around. When the CDC did a study in 2014 that said, in comparison to our white and Hispanic counterparts, that black men spend more time taking their kids to school, making lunches, doing homework,
wow.
et cetera.
But they won't tell you those stats.
But people don't want to believe. So I wrote an article. I did a piece, and the feedback that I got from black men was amazing. There were other black fathers that didn't know that. But if I look at my block in my subdivision, everybody's under 40. Everybody's a good father.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, you know what? If I could just show this, paint this picture for everybody, regardless of whether you have your dad in your life or not, that you can understand, you could break the cycle. Or like, even when I remember I had an opportunity to speak at Morehouse, and I asked the speaker to Spelman too, not just because the women are beautiful, but I really want those women to understand, the ones that might not have had that male influence, that there are brothers out there that are good black men.
Yeah.
Because mainstream media will portray us, as well as we portray ourselves as not being around, not being good fathers. And granted, we have our own issues in our community, but I believe positive energy begets positive results. So I could tell the negative narrative of there aren't enough black fathers, or I could show the positive narrative that there are a lot of black fathers doing great things in this country.
Yeah.
And if I tell the positive narrative, then they're young men, they're grown men that will see that, and women, and it could change.
It could change. And it could change one person and one experience at a time. Both you and I are products of amazing fathers.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I mean, on our show, we talk about it. We've only been on for 2 weeks, but you talking like that, I literally have an idea in my mind that I want to pitch to my producers right now, just so we can continue, because it's our responsibility to change the narrative.
Can I be part of that?
Yes,
pitch?
Of course. Awesome. Of course. Let's make it happen. The beauty about our show.
Can I bring some Hennessy?
No, I don't know about that. That might perpetuate the stereotype.
Okay. You're right. Like, look at it with this Hennessy.
Right.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, it is our responsibility as a show to make sure that we not only uplift our sisters, being at a sister circle, but we have the responsibility to uplift the brothers as well. Yeah,
and I appreciate that, because we get a bad rap.
Yeah,
some of it is deserved, but I feel like most of it holistically is not.
Yeah,
and like I said, I know a lot of black men that are just enthusiastic fathers.
Yes,
and like I said, my dad had his father, my grandfather had his father. So, I mean, and you know, everybody's not perfect. My grandfather was like, look, I got you to college. As a black man in that time, in the 40s and 50s. That's what you did.
Right.
My dad was very hands-on, because maybe his dad wasn't. I can't think of a time when my dad missed a baseball game, football game, concert choir, even the stuff that I didn't want him to come to, he came to. I had one of my friends say, like, your dad was like our dad, because I got into a lot of trouble when I was younger, so my dad was just always around. Well, my mom and dad were at the principal's office, always around. But I remember my dad told me a story where he was like, "We didn't even know if he was gonna make it to high school at one point." And I'm like, "Really?"
Right.
But you know, I had some behavioral issues
that
I had to get over. But I mean, that's my guy. Like I we look just alike, and I'm just thankful that I've had this time with him, because for the first 16 years of my life, I put him and my mama through a lot. My mom was always, in some cases, was always the good cop. My dad played the bad cop. And so I know a lot of times that probably hurt him, because I didn't understand that he, in essence, really is fighting for my life. Mm-hmm. He's trying to keep me out these streets. He understands that in sixth grade, they said I was crazy. Not because I was actually crazy, but because of Jimmy, who was white, did the same thing I did. They just said he's being a kid.
Yeah.
But if Aaron, who was black, did the same thing, they said, oh, Aaron's crazy.
Right.
So they sent me to Michael Reese Hospital to get psychiatric evaluation, because they wanted to hold me back to fifth grade. Not because of my grades and test scores, because my test scores
were out the roof.
But they wanted to hold me back because it was perceived that I was crazy. At the time, I didn't understand what I was going through. I thought it was cool. I got a day out of school, but they literally hold shapes up to you. Like, what does this mean? I got to sleep for 5 hours. They gave me food. Test came back, said Aaron's a perfectly normal kid. And so two things came out of that. One, my dad was like, that just means I'm going to start beating you some more. But the other thing was that if my parents had not been there to fight that,
then you would have been a statistic.
I would have been a statistic, because you tell a fifth grader or sixth grader they're not good enough or that they're crazy, you have nothing else to dispute that, but you're crazy. And I had friends that didn't have that support, and they got held back. Some of them made it, but some of them didn't.
Yeah.
And as I've gotten older, I've realized that in a lot of cases, that's what the educational system has done to
especially the black boys.
Black men, yeah. Black boys.
Yep.
And it's a shame. So like that's,
I mean, it's documented, and you're an example of it. I mean, the book, the conspiracy to destroy the black boy, and it starts in the third grade. Like this has been documented. My daddy had this book way back. It was in, you know, back when black families kept huge libraries in the living room. And like he had that. He's an educator. Right. He's an English educator.
Yep.
He's a football coach that had a master's in linguistics. So there's a stereotype for you that's been destroyed.
How you spell linguistics?
Right. And he's your frat brother. You know what I mean?
The
so
bros.
Like that's what I'm saying about the bros.
How the bros.
Diverse
the bros,
you
the
are.
Bros.
But I love it. So
it's funny because in third grade, like that's when where my issue started.
Absolutely.
Third to eighth grade.
It is systematic.
Yeah.
It's systematic.
But, you know, by the grace of God, I got out.
And honestly, great parents.
My dad told me the summer going into my freshman year of high school, he said three things are going to happen. He said, if you continue this behavior, they're going to expel you, which means you can't live here. He said, you're going to get arrested, which means you can't live here. Or he's like, they're going to shoot you, which means you can't live anywhere.
Wow.
And I'm like, my dad, that was the first time my dad ever really talked to me like a man. And I realized that he was pleading for my life. But he was like, there's nothing more I can do. And I changed just like that, because I was like, none of this is good. all right. And I literally changed at that moment.
Wow.
And I went into high school and I didn't really get into trouble till my senior year, and that's just because I was doing stupid stuff.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, I went to FAM because of my dad and all the beautiful women that were in Tallahassee. Homecoming 94 changed my
changed
life.
Y'all,
in Florida, or I should say us now, but Florida State and FAM had their homecoming the same weekend.
Oh, it changed your life. You were like, oh, this is where I have to be.
Yeah, I remember I met Gina Graves and everything.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I was like, I'm coming here. Yeah. Like, even if I don't get accepted, I'm moving to Tallahassee.
That is so funny.
And I will work my way into Florida A&M University.
I love it. Well, yes. We're glad to have had you, sir.
Oh, absolutely.
Before I let you go, what is your definition of cool?
Happiness.
Love it.
Just being happy. Like, that's it, because so many people miss the mark on that.
Yeah.
Living for others and not living for themselves. So
beautiful.
If you're happy, you're cool.
Good, good.
Wow, that's a powerful question.
Yeah. What is your, how can people find you? Social media.
If you just, I always say, like, you just go to aaronpaxtonarnold.com. So that's AaronPaxtonArnold. And everything pops up. Or like when I'm on the radio, I say just Google it because all my social media pops up.
Okay.
And then, yeah, I mean, it's funny. I'm accessible. Like, it's funny. I notice you do it too, as many comments as you get, but you take time to respond.
I really try, and I'm really behind. I swear, I was really thinking prior to our interview. I'm like, I really need to thank all of my Facebook followers for commenting about the show. I have not had time to go through
it. But you'll get to it.
I know.
And when it comes, they'll appreciate it, because I look at it like, if you, like, even like, for example, when my birthday comes, you get thousands of comments.
Right, right.
I will spend a whole day responding to everybody, because I'm like, the energy that you put in is the energy that you get back, and then some. And it's worth me taking a day.
Absolutely. Now, literally, it's like, okay, I can do a Facebook Live, and I can share it, and I can do all that. I'm going to do that, and I'm going to take some time to really try to respond. And I generally try to respond to everybody. Yeah. It has become overwhelming, but I just want them to know I appreciate them and love them so much, because they take the time to comment, and I should take the time to at least like it.
If you can.
I'm trying my best.
And so now they know that you're trying your best.
Yeah.
And you do as you do. But that's why people engage with you. That's why people love you, because of we might be in public kicking it, we might be at Crickets later, but you're still gonna be on that TV doing your thing.
Yeah, you
know?
Thank you.
And then with your kids, and then with sporty girls.
Right.
And, you know, husband. I mean, it's just good. I mean, you represent what is good about just, I always say, like, one of the things when I see you, like, growing up, I always said, like, I used to read Essence when I was little. And I like, man, I want to be an Essence woman, you know? And so, because an Essence woman she might have had a little hood to her, but she was smart, she was classy.
That's me.
She, you know, she might have a makeup artist, but she didn't need makeup.
Right.
You know, she could coexist across multiple platforms. So I think that's why people have responded to you so well, because you are the epitome of what it is to be a Essence woman.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And that's good.
It's crazy that you said that, because that's one of my dreams, that I really want to be on the cover of Essence one day. And I know I will.
Yes.
I'll get there.
Yeah, you will.
Yeah, I will. Wow, this has been absolutely fantastic.
Well, thank you.
And I knew.
Thank you for the Hennessy.
You're welcome.
Hey, y'all want to do a podcast? Hey, you better do this one, because they give you Hennessy.
Look, mama got a new check. I can buy my guests some drinks now.
Amen.
Before, I'd be like, here goes some water. You want that?
Oh,
that's all I got.
Oh,
it's all good. Aaron, thank you so much. This has been absolutely fantastic. I wish you nothing
thank
but
you.
The very best.
I appreciate it.
You know, your big sister going to always have your back.
My counselor.
Yeah. Oh,
hey,
yeah, I know.
Well, we had a real conversation before we got on here.
We had a 30-minute conversation before we turned the microphones on, but it's all good. I'm here for you.
I'm here for you always.
And I appreciate you.
Nah, thank you.
Aaron Paxton Arnold, everybody.
Yes. What up? My name is Aaron Paxton Arnold. It's AaronPaxtonArnold. But I'm a cool bruh of Omega Sci-Fi Fraternity Incorporated. Shout out to the FAMU Qs.